One candy bar, a pair of knee pads, a helmet fixed with a headlamp, and some guts. Don't try going into a Kentucky cave without them. A sense of humor helps, too.
Some people will get way back in a cave and say, well, I'm not going any farther, just leave me here to die. Well, you can't do that. That would stink up the cave.
That's Roger Brucker, a 77-year-old retired advertising executive from a Dayton suburb, who happens to be one of the country's foremost cavers and an expert on the granddaddy of them all, Mammoth Cave. At 365 miles, it is the world's longest. Brucker, who has charted and surveyed many of those miles, is something of a wisecracking professor. With more than 50 years of speleological knowledge stored in his head, he has co-authored 4 books about the caves and has just finished the final draft of a 5th volume. On a Thursday in August, he guides a small group into the darkness and depth of Crystal Cave, 150 feet under the national park, through canyons carved by underground rivers 6 million years ago, past rocks dripping in glittering white crystals, and down into chutes and crawlways that test a neophyte's psychological mettle. Like the dust particles floating in the light beam from a caver's headlamp, danger seems to hang in the chilled air of those vast holes under the earth. We take turns descending into what cavers call a crawlway, but what looks like a small hole in the cave floor. Every rational thought screams, do not go down there.
You have to be a little crazy to do this and not afraid of getting your hands dirty.
A palpable fear takes over as I ease into the passage behind Roger.
All right. I'm in a chute here with rock sloping up over my right and rock jutting down over my chest on the left. And I'm scooting down on my bottom. Looking for a foothold, and there's the ground.
It was almost 90 years ago that a young Kentucky man named Floyd Collins discovered this cave on land owned by his father. Collins delved into caves with a passion, and as he hiked the hills of Flint Ridge, he knew that air currents breathing from a hole in the ground meant just one thing: a cave was likely underfoot. He found an opening and enlisted his family to help excavate an entrance and begin luring tourists off the beaten path to Mammoth and up a long, rutted road to Crystal Cave.
People knew how to put solicitors out on the road to stop cars, to put their foot up on the running board, say, you folks here on a vacation? When they said yes, they'd say, well, I recommend you don't go to Mammoth Cave because it's all dark and it's closed for repairs, mostly underwater, and very dangerous. I would recommend you go over to Floyd Collins' Crystal Cave because there are gleaming formations over there and it's not all sooted up.
What tourists back in the late teens and early 20s beheld was an underground canyon, the sweeping curve of a riverbed with scalloped edges. White gypsum flowers clung to limestone overhangs, gleaming like jewels. But as spectacular as the subterranean scenery was, a flaw hamstrung the operation. It was a lousy location, too far from the main road. So Floyd, then a 37-year-old man, went hunting for a more strategically situated cave. On a late January day in 1925, he descended into a hole he had helped clear with a blast of dynamite days before.
He had no fear. He would see a tree and he'd just climb up the tree. And not only that, but he would go out on the limb, way out on the limb, and eye the next tree and leap like a squirrel to the next limb. I mean, you could fall 10 feet and break something, but that was the kind of person he was. He was impulsive.
Floyd Collins had belly crawled through mud and over slime into a narrow chute, no wider than 18 inches, when a rock broke loose and pinned his foot. He was, to quote the title of Roger Brucker's book, trapped. Buried alive, 55 feet underground, Floyd was wedged in a spot that only the wiriest and bravest of people could reach. Inside of a week, his plight had made banner headlines across the country, as rescuers tried in vain to free him. Drops of water trickled down on Floyd, followed by more cave-ins of rock and soil that would seal his fate. Goaded by the newspapers and newsreel coverage, people arrived on the scene at Sand Cave in droves.
Everybody got in their flivver and rode down the road to Sand Cave. There were various estimates from 5,000 people to 20,000 people.
A Louisville reporter named Skeets Miller won a Pulitzer for his coverage of the event. And the tragedy of Floyd Collins was fodder for a country song.
Oh, come all you young people and listen while I tell the fate of Floyd Collins, a lad we all knew well. His face was fair and handsome, his heart was true and brave. His body now lies sleeping in a lonely sandstone cave.
Gene Page, who took friends to visit the National Park Overlook near Sand Cave, lives in North Carolina, but she grew up in the 1930s near the caves of South Central Kentucky and remembers hearing people talk about Floyd.
And we just heard that lately that they're fixing to make a movie or
That's
something
right.
like that.
That's right.
And I said, I'll just take you by there. And when the movie comes out, you can say, well, I've been there.
Yeah. But, and what kind of things do people talk about it? I mean, do they just remembering
how
crazy things were?
How awful it was and how they couldn't get him out. And we heard that you could hear him calling for help, and he was thirsty, and people just was appalled, you know, at how awful that would be. And it was awful. My daddy cautioned us never to go in a hole we didn't know where. See what happened to him? Don't do that.
It's true that the Floyd Collins story has attracted Hollywood movie producers. Billy Bob Thornton is slated to play the lead role, and Brucker is pleased they will rely on the book about Collins that he co-wrote in 1979. Roger Brucker had read all the news accounts, but he was never satisfied. He wanted first-hand knowledge of what happened to Floyd in Sand Cave. So beginning in the 1950s, he began talking to people who were there, Floyd's brothers, Skeets Miller, and alleged sweethearts. But the most daring research came in 1977, when Brucker and a few other explorers gathered their courage and descended into the hole that had claimed Floyd. Lacking permission from the National Park Service, they turned it into a clandestine operation. The caver from Dayton learned why so many rescuers in 1925 went in once trying to help Floyd and came out saying, never again.
It'd be like dropping a shoelace on the floor. The cave is convoluted. And so people like to think, well, Floyd, you just walk in the cave and you walk to where Floyd was and pick him up and, or pick up the rock that's trapping his foot. Well, the problem was that there wasn't any place you could walk in Sand Cave. It was a crawlway all the way, a crawlway through treacherous breakdown, held up only by mud. And when we entered the cave to do the research for this book, we were frightened because pieces of the ceiling would let go, pieces the size of a lunch bucket or a thermos bottle would suddenly be resting on your back, and unlike movies where things go rumble, rumble, and the whole camera shakes, nothing shook. It just kept coming down on you. And very, very scary. The experienced explorers who we had doing this after six trips said, we aren't going in anymore. This is too dangerous.
The epitaph on Floyd Collins' tombstone calls him the greatest cave explorer ever known. From his days in the ad business, Roger Brucker knows hype when he sees it.
Floyd Collins has always been held up as an example of everything you shouldn't do in cave exploring. He went in there alone instead of taking somebody with him. He didn't have three sources of light. He had one source of light, which flickered and failed, and he tried to come out without it. Now, he had done that before in Crystal Cave, but that's no way to cave. Finally, he crawled through a place where he couldn't get himself out if he got stuck, and most cavers wouldn't try that. So we've learned a lot of things from the lessons of Floyd Collins.
Cavers rely on technique, and Brucker relishes the chance to share pointers as he leads a team through C3, the code name explorers use for Collins Crystal Cave.
Now, when you crawl in the cave, you want to stay as high as you can.
Why is that?
It's easier to move. You can move a little faster and with less effort. You kind of want to leave with your head, because if your hard hat hits the ceiling, no harm is done.
Was that the technique for me to slide down on my butt down there?
That's a perfectly good technique. It's whatever gets you through.
After 2 hours inside C3, the grit of a fine terracotta dust coats my mouth and nostrils. My thighs and shoulders ache from all the crouching. We exit the cave and watch park ranger Vicky Carson once again wrangle with the locks on a steel door that shields the cave entrance. As Roger Brucker climbs the steps away from Crystal Cave, his face framed by a tan miner's helmet, he suddenly looks like the actor Anthony Hopkins, a mischievous glint in his eyes. Dressed in his Superman blue, British-made climbing coveralls, there's something boyish about this 77-year-old caveman.
My mother used to read stories to me out of Child Life magazine, and every other story, it seemed, had a secret panel or a secret passage to somewhere or another, a tunnel under the earth, and I was just fascinated by those. It's a sense of curiosity that is never satisfied. I always want to see what's around the bend. I have not been in this passage we were just crawling in. I am now dying to continue on where we all stopped. And it looks like it ought to go someplace, and I'd like to know where it goes. So that's what brings me back.
It's worth noting the contrast between Brucker and Floyd Collins. Collins met an early death in the caves here. Brucker, who has suffered 3 heart attacks, but still goes caving and cycling on long cross-country treks, seems to have found a fountain of youth in the caverns and in his unending curiosity. But he sure wishes he could have met Floyd.
My feeling about Floyd Collins is that he died too soon, at 37. I would have loved to meet the man and swap stories with somebody like that. I'd like to find out what it was like to have your light go out and spend 18 hours trying to find your way out of Crystal Cave just on feel and air currents alone. I'd like to know that.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris Burrell.
It may not be a sand cave in which we find our tomb, but at the bar of judgment, we too must meet our doom.